Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. This is the second of our two-parter on Brian Dugan. So if you have not listened to last week's episode, please do that first. Sominok is a small village located along the boundary between DeKalb and LaSalle counties in Illinois. Brian Dugan was driving through there when he spotted Melissa Ackerman bicycling with her friend Opal. He grabbed her and then drove off with her in his car, a blue Gremlin. At that time, the police department in Sominok only had three officers, one for each eight-hour shift. Realizing they needed more help in their search for the young girl, they called in the FBI, as well as neighboring sheriff's departments, to assist. Within 2 days, there were 60 agents in town to help, which was one-fifth of the FBI's Chicago division, myself included. We set up a command post in the local Catholic Church rectory. We sat in the room, elbow to elbow. There were FBI investigators, search and rescue teams, topographers, and reconnaissance pilots. The topographers mapped out grids within a 15-mile radius of Sominok, and local volunteers joined the search parties, walking those areas that they had laid out. We had a plane equipped with infrared photography that could survey the areas out of range from the ground search. Every one of us was determined to find this little girl. Melissa's parents were a constant at the command post, hoping and praying for any news. The locals also provided a buffet of home-cooked meals just for the search effort. They told me that cooking made them feel less helpless, and I often wished that my own contribution could be that concrete to counteract my feelings of powerlessness and frustration as the days passed without a break in the case. When I got home each night, I hugged my son for so long that he often squirmed his way out in annoyance. At first, I didn't want to scare him, so I told him only that we were looking for a little girl who was lost. But each day, he asked me if we found her. And each day, I would have to fight back tears when I told him no. 2 weeks after her abduction, Melissa Ackerman's body was found. Throughout this case, and long after it ended, I thought about a bumper sticker on the wall at Quantico in the office of a profiler who saw far more harrowing murders than I had. It read, "If you love your children, never let them out of your sight." Now, this is an impossibility, but when you do what I do, you're always worried. When my son was in school, mind you, this was before the days of frequent school shootings, I could relax. But after school, till I got home, I felt hyper-attuned, as if I were tracking him with a kind of mother's sonar, trying to sense any danger around him. I was lucky. My son was at home, safe. In addition to being cautious, my job also taught me to always be grateful.
As a Killer Psyche listener, you'll love Audible's new pulse-pounding collection of exclusive thrillers that are guaranteed to keep you on the edge of your seat. With captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances, their titles are brought to life. I recommend The Killer Across the Table by John Douglas, my mentor at the FBI Behavioral Science Unit, and his co-author, Mark Olshacker. It is great. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. That's audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. Killer Psyche is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. From Wondery and Treefort, I'm Candace DeLong, and this is the second season of Killer Psyche. I've spent 5 decades studying people's minds through my work as an FBI profiler and psychiatric nurse. I've interviewed lots of murderers, including serial killers. And the question of why they did it is what I get asked time and time again. It is difficult to get a satisfying answer without diving deep into their mindsets. So that's what we're doing. And I will give you my best analysis in this series of what made them do what they did. This episode is part 2 of Brian Dugan.
So Candace, this is our first interview back, season 2. How are you feeling?
Mm-hmm. I feel great. I'm so excited about season 2. Season 1, I've never had a year in my life go by so fast. And it was because of the podcast.
It was fun, though.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go ahead and dig right into Brian Dugan. You started off working on the Donna Schnoor case before Brian Dugan was ever even thought of as a suspect. And this was your first time consulting with police since you had your profiler training. What were they looking for? Why did they bring you in?
They had an unsolved murder on their hands, and that was the murder of Donna Schnoor. I think I was brought into it maybe 4 to 6 weeks later. And one of the things I remember about it was as soon as I sat down with the detectives, they told me that they thought her boyfriend did it. And I thought to myself, oh, I wish they hadn't told me that because it's influencing my, you know, I need to look at the crime scenes and know all the details. And then, of course, working with the behavioral science unit, develop a profile of the unknown offenders. But of course, I'm not saying they did anything wrong. They were just sharing with me that they thought the boyfriend did it. But here's an area where knowledge of profilers helped with that. And profiling, as you know, is developing a personality sketch and a lifestyle sketch, as opposed to a composite sketch, of an unknown offender. And it's based on crime scene analysis, victimology, the kinds of things we've talked about many times. But there's something else that can be attributed to profilers who are well-versed and educated in violent crime of all types. They see lots of different crime scenes. We know
certain facts about certain types of people. And one of them is when a husband or a boyfriend murders their partner, rape is rarely a part of it. Donna, first of all, the attack, she's run off the road at 2:30 in the morning. The guy walks up to her, the guy being Brian Dugan, and he smashes her in the face with a closed fist, pulls her out of the car, drives her to a secluded area, a quarry that he probably had prior knowledge of, and there rapes her, hit her so hard on the top of the head, it would have caused her to be unconscious, and then drowns her. Husbands and boyfriends, don't do that. That is a violent, that's a stranger type of assault. When husbands kill wives and live-in domestic partners kill girlfriends, it is not for the same reason that men like Brian Dugan, offenders like Brian Dugan, it's for a different reason. Brian Dugan was going after gratification of sexual violence, doing tremendous sexual violence to a stranger, a child, young woman, didn't matter. When a husband or a partner is angry enough and they kill, maybe a jealous rage, something like that, rape is not a part of it because it's a different motivation. For example, I can say this because O.J. Simpson was found liable in the wrongful death lawsuit of his ex-wife and Ron Goldman. Here's the crime scene. Nicole is found a few steps outside her front door, multiple stab wounds, 13, and a slice to her neck that has been described as nearly decapitating. Then Ron Goldman, his body is a few steps behind her, meaning she came out the door first, and he has 6 stab wounds. So the target of that attack clearly was Nicole. Rage, just rage. No sexual assault, no attempt to look at her breasts, no attempt to look at any part of her sexually, which we do see in some crimes, not this one. So then, from my point of view, if I was called to offer the profile on that, let's say before it was known, one of my first questions to the LAPD would have been, well, after they would have told me, no, there was no sexual assault, I would have said, has she recently been in some kind of spat, a bad divorce, a bad breakup, anything like that? And they probably would have said, as a matter of fact, she divorced her ex-husband about a year ago, and the divorce became final within a couple of weeks of her murder. And my next question would have been, what are you talking to me for? Go get the ex-husband. The crime scene's vastly different. Nicole Brown Simpson and Donna Schnoor. And I'm hoping that the listeners can see the variance there. One was an attack of rage by someone that knew the victim, already had a sexual intimate relationship with them, and now wants to destroy them, as opposed to a woman who is run off the road, middle of the night, beaten in the face, dragged, taken somewhere, raped, and then hit so hard it made her unconscious, and then drowned. Vastly different motivations of the offenders. One is jealous rage, and the other one is sexual violence. And they're not all angry. Definitely Brian Dugan was. Every time he raped those two little girls that he killed and Donna Schnoor, he was very angry. beating, horrible things, totally unnecessary. And rape was a part of it. So when the police were leaning on the boyfriend, and of course it did not turn out to be the boyfriend, and it rarely does. Sometimes, yes, we see horrible rape murders and the offender is a previous partner of that woman. That does happen, but it's not as common.
You said it's a anger rape, a rageful rape.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think these people are angry all the time, or there's something that just triggers it and they have to go and rape someone because they have so much rage? Or is it always simmering?
No, you nailed it. It's always simmering. Let's not forget, all of Brian Dugan's murder victims were victims of opportunity. He didn't know he was going to run into Opal and Melissa that day. He didn't know there was going to be a little girl behind the locked door of that home in Naperville and that her mom wasn't home. He didn't know he was going to be at a stoplight, look over and see an attractive young blonde woman. They were victims of opportunity, but the simmering rage was always there.
What should someone do? And I know you used to teach a class about this, but Donna Schnoor was in a car and she was run off the road. If you're in that kind of situation, other than to drive off, maybe she couldn't drive off. What do you do when this happens? I know nowadays we have a cell phone. Let's say that's
right.
Not there. What's the best thing to do when you get into those kind of situations?
Well, ever since I got into profiling, I started looking at, could this have been prevented? And why this victim? Why such and such a behavior? Can we learn something from that? And that's how I developed these safety classes that I used to do. And there's a few things we can learn from what happened to Donna. You mentioned she was run off the road. Having another car hit you and try to run you off the road had to be very frightening. But never forget that when you're in a vehicle, that you're behind the wheel, you're in a 2,000-pound weapon. It's not a gun, not a knife, but you can kill someone with a car. And I'm not blaming the victim. Please don't anybody think I'm blaming the victim. This is a learning. I'm sure Donna would like knowing that people might learn from what happened to her, if it happens to them, how to best get out of it. Don't turn your engine off. If somebody's approaching you, even if they have a gun, do not turn your engine off. And if they have blocked you in the front, put your car in reverse and get out of there. Here's the thing about guns. Most people are not criminals. Most people will do whatever they're told to do if there is a gun pointed at them because they're terrified. And they think, if I do what he says, I'll be okay. No, you won't. You probably won't. And I'm not talking about somebody coming up to you in an alley in a city and saying, give me your watch and your money, and points a gun at you. That's different. But if you're on a country road and somebody points a gun at you, and I think we talked about that in the Wichita massacre case, I'm not sure. They are pointing that gun at you and threatening you because they need to gain your compliance, your submission, to do what they want. And Brian wanted Donna in his car to take to the quarry and do what he wanted to do. So can I guarantee if somebody approaches you with a gun and says, get out of your car, that if you go in reverse or if they're in front of you, hit the gas, run them over. You're entitled to defend your own life. But if somebody's pointing a gun at you and you comply in a situation like she was in, it's not going to go well for you. Secondly, she rolled down her window. Don't ever do that. even if you're stopped by a cop. Roll your window down a couple of inches. And by the way, I have seen probably 10 murder cases of somebody that ran them off the road or was impersonating a cop. They'll get a car that's the same make and model as police vehicles, and they will paint it black and white. They buy a red light called the bubble light to go on the top, and they go out searching. Do they drive around major metropolitan areas searching? No, because that's where you got the real cops. I'm talking about more deserted roads. Of course, you stop, and anybody can buy a police uniform, and guy walks up to the car, roll down the window. He's got you. You're his. And especially if he says, get out of the car, you've got trouble. You've got trouble. Don't get out of the car. Don't roll your window down anymore. Donna didn't have a cell phone. You're right. But these days, gosh, a cell phone can be just as effective as a gun to protect yourself. You hit that 911 button on your phone and tell them, I've been stopped by someone who says he's a cop and I'm at mile marker 12. Pay attention to your environment too. When you're out by yourself, pay attention to where you are in case you have to call for help.
I'm going to call you if I get taken to jail. I'm going to be like, I know. Candace DeLong told me not to roll down the window. She told me not to follow you.
No, here's the thing. You can roll down the window a crack. You can pass your license and registration through an inch of space. Now, if you're driving drunk and you're swerving all over the road, hey, that's on you. Yeah, you might be stopped. And yeah, you may be asked to get out of the vehicle, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about how not to get violated if you're on a situation like Donna Schnoor was in.
Let's talk about how you became involved with the Melissa Ackerman, Opal Horton case, and what eventually your duties became during that.
Right. I was not assigned to the violent crime squad in Chicago at the time of Melissa Ackerman's abduction, but I wanted to be involved in it. And I don't recall exactly how I got assigned to it. I probably raised my hand and said, can I go out to Sominok and work on that case? And the supervisor said, sure. So that's how I got out there. And then I was told that Dr. Ann Burgess, and I did know who she was because she was one of our instructors in profiling school. And I met with her at the airport, and an FBI agent that was also a pilot flew Dr. Burgess and I down to Sominok. And we started working together, working with Opal, working with her parents. When I say working, I mean interacting. She was a living witness. And she was only 8 years old. Had to be handled very carefully. And Anne was very good at that. So we worked together on that. And even after the crime was solved, I continued to work with Dr. Burgess on how Opal was doing and getting drawings from Opal and things like that, things that would help her.
So when you were dealing with Opal, did she seem aware of what was really going on, of the probabilities of her friend being brought back, or is it something you kind of had to tiptoe around?
I recall we tiptoed around it. Melissa's body had not been found. But those of us that were schooled in crime scene analysis, behavioral analysis of violent criminals, we believed she was dead. And she was probably killed within an hour of being abducted. Nobody was going to share that probability with the little girl.
Once Melissa's body was found, I know you had an interaction with Opal, and you talked to her parents about how you should approach it. Can you tell me a little bit about how that went?
Okay. starting to tear up here. When Melissa's body was found, we and the agents I was working with had discussions first with Opal's parents about how they thought would be the best way to tell Opal this. And I recall asking her parents, did she believe in angels and heaven and that kind of thing? And her parents said, oh, yes, yes. And give me a second. A male agent that I was working with and that had been working with Opal, he was, I call him, he was like a bear, a big teddy bear of a guy. And he got down on one knee and I was standing behind him and he took Opal's hand and his great big FBI paw. And he said, and we were all kind of losing it, trying to hold it together. And he said, Opal, and her parents were standing behind her. He said, Opal, we found Melissa. And she's in heaven with Jesus. Jesus took her to heaven. She did not cry. She looked at Jim, the agent, and she said, why didn't he take the bad guy? Of course, for that, we had no answer.
Killer Psyche is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up for spring, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Whether you thrive around people or you prefer some more alone time, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. Your therapist can help you identify triggers and appropriate coping mechanisms so you can continue to build helpful habits. Plus, therapy can be beneficial for everyone, not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/psyche today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/psyche. Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe as ex-homicide detective Roy Freeman. Freeman is forced to piece together the brutal evidence from a decade-old murder investigation. With only instincts to trust, he faces a chilling truth. Sometimes it's best to let sleeping dogs lie. I'm really looking forward to this movie. I have interviewed some people that had a fractured mind regarding traumatic events. This is going to be good. Watch Sleeping Dogs now on digital. On sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
It seems that Brian Duggan not only ruined the lives of the families of his murder victims, but there were several investigators. Detective John Sam was one of them. And then your friend Ed, he was one of them. He was also a detective. When they said, we don't think the two that were on death row did it, they were ostracized. In fact, Detective John Sam, who was one of the original investigators on the Jeanine Nicarico case, he said, these guys did not do it. And he was ridiculed. He was bullied. And he eventually retired from actually being a police officer, which he loved doing.
He was forced out.
Yeah, he was forced out. And same with Ed. I mean, he was...
Yeah, Ed had two teenage boys at the time. And he was terrified of them being out driving. It wasn't just ostracism, threats. It was actual threats. It's just astounding to me how horrible good people can be sometimes. Maybe you just attributed them to be good and they weren't. But circling back, when a child is kidnapped, raped, and murdered, someone has to pay. And cops and investigators get emotional too.
I want to switch topics really quickly and go back to the early days of Brian Dugan. Now, I know when I was younger and I would want to date someone, my parents, you know, they would check him out or they would, you know, they were a little cautious, but
oh, sure.
It seems as though when Brian Dugan was released from prison, he moved in with his 16-year-old girlfriend.
Yes.
Whose father was a deputy sheriff. Now, again, my parents might have just been super cautious, but I cannot imagine that my parents would allow an ex-con to live in my basement and date me.
Right.
An ex-con who, by the way, is like, what was he, like 10 years older than she was?
Yes, 8 to 10 years older. I cannot understand how that happened, but there's a never-ending supply of parents making bad decisions about their children. Of course. You know, I hear this a lot. Everybody deserves a second chance. And another one is, he paid his dues. Okay, he paid his dues. Maybe a second chance is fine. But with your daughter? No.
Especially when you know the types of things that go on in prison and you know what generally happens. Yes, I believe that. I know we have a disagreement on this a lot. I believe that people can change. I don't believe that serial killers and sex offenders change, but I do believe people
right.
can change. But I probably wouldn't let them or like for them to date my nieces or my son. It does, however, make me feel a little bit better about the fact that I let my son stay up till like 11 p.m. last night and, you know, and have a caramel apple or whatever. It does put into perspective my choices, and I'm sure a lot of people's choices as parents. You think, oh, okay, well, at least I didn't let my kid do that.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. Let's say for the sake of this discussion that Brian Dugan had no criminal record and was not a bad guy. He was 24 and he's interested in a 16-year-old. That is a problem. A 30-year-old being interested in a 20-year-old, okay. But an adult man interested in an adolescent girl is a problem. What we do know about these guys is psychopaths and sociopaths. They tend to hang around people younger than them when they're outside, when they're not in prison. And there's a reason for that. When they are 13 years old and causing trouble, a lot of their own age mates don't want anything to do with them. So they hang around younger kids. We say, well, why would a younger kid think back when you were 10? Didn't you think it was cool if a 13-year-old wanted to talk to you and maybe spend time with you? Wow, an older kid likes me. I must really be cool. But there's a reason for it. The psychopath wants an audience and people his own age don't want anything to do with it. They can read him. Older people have more experience and with people and their judgment is better. And a lot of people have a sense about somebody that just is inherently makes them nervous, then that person might be somebody not to hang around with. So a 24-year-old living in the same house with a 16-year-old that he is dating, yikes. And then factor in that he's a convict, ex-con, yikes.
I think yikes is a bit of an understatement, but I'll let that slide with you, Candace.
Right.
On Killer Psyche, we often talk about organized and disorganized killers. How would you classify Brian Dugan?
One of the hallmarks of a disorganized murder is what we call the blitz, like the Blitzkrieg, a German word for World War II, just this overwhelming show of force and much more than is necessary to accomplish the goal. Physical force. And disorganized killers, usually, we see that a lot. They don't have the gift of gab. They're not charming. You may say, well, why would I say that? Well, a lot of killers, the more organized kind, like the Ted Bundy kind and others that we'll be discussing, they are charming. They have good verbal skills. They can control their emotions. They may draw a bead on a potential victim and maybe for one reason or another, start chatting her up, see if maybe she's somebody that fits their fantasy and they might want to live out that fantasy with that woman. And they like to talk the victim into actually going with them somewhere. The lure, L-U-R-E. And they pride themselves on that. And that takes an organized personality that has planned things out. And remember, boys that grow up to be serial killers, generally they started thinking about this kind of thing, domination and control over a helpless victim, whether it be a woman or same gender victim. They've been thinking about that since their early adolescence. And so in their fantasies, they work out what they want to do. And if the fantasy makes them smile and they feel good about a particular thing that they're thinking, then they're going to keep enhancing that fantasy until they're ready to do it. And that's why they are generally pretty successful at getting away with murder again and again and again. Whereas the disorganized, well, Richard Trenton Chase, season one, the Sacramento vampire killer, highly disorganized mind, primary thought disorder, also known as schizophrenia. He could not plan anything, and his thoughts were disorganized and bizarre. The crime scenes of people like that are generally so sloppy, so messy, that the killer leaves evidence behind. Now, Brian Dugan didn't do that. But let's not forget, Brian Dugan had been in prison. And prisons are universities of rape and homicide. Rapists find each other in prison, and they talk, and they share experiences, and they plan, and they teach each other, don't do this or do this. And so when he took Janine, he wiped down everything he touched. He learned to do that in prison. So his actions that day with Janine were unplanned. He no doubt had a fantasy of it, but he didn't know she was going to be there. And it was the middle of the day, and at very high risk to himself, he moved his car. So that knowing she was there, he moved his car, went back to get her. That is actually, he's an unorganized killer, but that's an organized component. That's very organized. Julie, it's hard to find a purist. Truly, it is. And so a lot of these guys, they may be an organized killer that has some disorganized features or a disorganized killer, such as Brian Dugan, who occasionally thinks something through and does something that looks like it's an organized thing to do.
With Brian, burglary was, well, I guess you would call it his gateway crime. Do you find that to be true of a number of rapists and murderers? Oh, and can you tell our audience what the difference is between a burglary and a robbery?
Burglary means it's inside a dwelling, usually someone's house is what we're talking about. Robbery can happen out on the street, be mugged. Hey, you know, give me your wallet. That's a robbery. The difference is, for me, looking at it from a behavioral standpoint, look at the difference between a mugging on the street in broad daylight compared to someone entering a dwelling where people live. It's vastly different. When burglars go in homes, and I think it was up to like 45% of them, there's some kind of sexual component to it. And if someone is home, like a little girl or a woman, something bad could happen. She might get raped. And there's all these charges, and burglary, of course, is one of them, breaking and entry, burglary, blah, blah, blah. And they work with their attorneys to bargain away or plea bargain away the sex offenses that took place because they don't want the world to know that they're a pervert. That's what they say. That's what they call themselves.
That's somewhat of a self-loathing, self-hating statement. I mean, I don't consider pervert a good word. And yet we know when dealing with a lot of these guys, they have a tendency to be narcissistic and to have that kind of my stuff doesn't stink. What do you think about that? I mean, is that a contradiction that is common to be narcissistic and yet be self-loathing at the same time? Or do you feel like that's not really a self-loathing statement?
No, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because many, many, including Brian Dugan, many serial killers have said, I don't know why I did what I did. I don't know why I do what I want to do. And it's a common thing that psychiatrists hear from killers. And sometimes they're crying when they say it. And I don't mean crocodile tears. I mean real, like, my God, why am I? So they know there's something wrong with them. They know they're not like their peers in high school. They know they can't talk about the things they'd like to do sexually to a girl or to a woman in a locker room because nobody else is talking about it. So maybe it's not a good thing. I'm thinking, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't talk about what I want to do. Maybe I shouldn't talk about that I get a kick out of torturing animals. And so this child develops into an adult and they are aware that they are flawed, deeply flawed, and they have a secret. And that secret is they want to do bad things. And it is confusing to them because fantasizing about it makes them feel good. It is erotic. It turns them on. When these guys do get caught and they're in prison, they find each other because they, especially child molesters, they want desperately to talk about what they like to do. And they find somebody that will listen and understand that's just like they are.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Brian, his death sentence has been commuted because there's no death penalty now in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that was the right decision?
Well, I used to be hang 'em high. And I used to think if somebody's on death row, they did the crime. Well, I was wrong. And my eyes have been opened. And I even said it myself years ago. Well, maybe some people we should save the death penalty for. But here's the problem. It's a problem and it's also a good thing. We do not execute death penalties quickly. There was a time in the 50s, we're going to have a story down the road, killer named Harvey Glattman, serial killer of women, was arrested, tried, convicted, and executed within 1 year of being arrested. That was how things were in the 50s. Now, there's so many appeals and the process is so long. I used to think that's a bad thing. But you know what is a good thing? Because all of these people that have been exonerated, and exonerated means you didn't do it. You were wrongly convicted. You do not belong in prison. So how do we determine who should get the death penalty? Absolute DNA and a confession with details and like Brian Dugan? I don't know. I think executions serve our sense of vengeance for sure. Yeah, he deserved to die. What a bad guy. We got to get him out of society. Well, if he's in prison, he's not in society. So I've changed my mind on the death penalty only because there have been so many exonerations. And there is no doubt in my mind that there have been people executed that were innocent. They did not do it. So therefore, I'd say no. No. Prison, prison, prison. And not a nice one. Prison doesn't have to be nice, but they need to be removed from society, obviously. And there's no reformation. There is no rehabilitation of serial killers.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about working on the Brian Dugan case, about Brian Dugan in particular?
Well, I've already touched on my thought that I think he confessed so quickly and confessed to a murder he wasn't even suspected of and that he could have gotten away with because two men were on death row for it, because he wanted it over. He was 26 years old and he had become a serial killer of little girls and he wanted it over. This is my speculation as to why he did what he did. It was, as they say, one for the books for the state of Illinois because of all the legal, judicial, law enforcement, prosecutorial issues that came up later with two innocent men being in prison for it. I think about the case now and then. I think about Opal. I think about how Melissa didn't get to live her life. And Brian Dugan has lived 37 years more than she did. And that bothers me. Next week on Killer Psyche, Tyler Barris. If you like our show, please give us a rating and review. Follow Killer Psyche on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. By supporting them, you help us offer the show for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery and Treefort Media, this is Killer Psyche. I'm your host, Candace DeLong. This episode was written and produced by Lisa Ammerman and Julie Burke. Story research and additional writing by Ann Liu. Mix and sound design by Joshua Morales. Senior audio producer, Maxwell Carney. Head of audio, Tom Monahan. Renee Levesque is our production manager. Brandon Clark, Lindsay Whistler, Colin Modell, and Jada Williams are production assistants. Oscar Guido is the producer from Treefort Media. From Amazon Music and Wondery, the producer is Stephanie Joaquin. And the co-executive producer is Julie Burke. Lastly, our executive producers are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman for Treefort, and Marshall Louie and Aaron O'Flaherty for Wondery. The series is produced by Wondery and Treefort Media.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.